Well, it's 2026 somewhere in the world, just not here yet. It's a little after 9 o'clock in the morning. Lee Rogers, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Okay, I get some good text messages coming in, but this is our last hour of 2025 together, and then after that, I think I was asked to come back for a couple of dates in February, so it might be a little while before I'm back here, but I always look forward to it, and I hope, I hope Lee Rogers is working, because it's always so good. Couple things I wanted to get to. I saw this one story, and I mentioned it last hour and didn't get time to do it. So back in 1998, there was a poll that was done where people predicted what would happen by the year 2025. And I guess in 1998, Lee, possibly you took part in this poll, for all we know, because it was a pretty big poll. And it was done, a Gallup poll. And I wanted to read, and what they do is normally they specifically had questions. Do you think this will happen by 2025? Yes or no? So yes, it'll happen. No, they don't think it'll happen. They weren't trying to predict the future, but they were trying to predict the likelihood of something happening over the next, couple of decades. So I'm going to read you the things they thought would happen by 2025 in the order of most likely. Okay. Number one, the emergence of a deadly new disease.
Well, let's see. We've got that one. So.
We got that. Oh, we got many. I think that's almost a guarantee. Ever since the start of human time, there's been a deadly human disease. Next, most likely, gay marriage will be commonplace. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. That was number two on the list. In 1998, of all times, I wouldn't have expected that would be up there. Number three, it says the country will elect a black president.
Yeah.
That's interesting, too. Yeah. Okay, we've had that. Yeah. Didn't Bill Clinton say he was the first black president?
Yeah, he always claimed that, and I understand what he was trying to say there, that he was the first president that truly, in his mind, represented the minorities, but, obviously.
And next one, physician-assistant suicide will be commonplace. A lot of Jack Kevorkian in the headlines in the 90s.
Yeah, there was. And I don't think that's really become commonplace. It is in Europe, but or at least more prevalent, but not commonplace yet. So,
next, with 67% agreeing it would happen by 2025, an environmental catastrophe will have occurred. That's so broad. I don't even know how you would interpret that.
Yeah, that's I mean, how do you define that? And, I'm sure that
now, keep in mind, when they asked the country will elect a black president, 69% said yes. At 66%, they said the country will have elected a woman president. Less likely than a black president, they put it in that sense. Now, that has not happened, though there's been a couple of instances where it could have happened.
Oh, yeah.
Kamala Harris and Hillary Clinton,
right.
But it did not. One next down the list. Illicit drug use, such as marijuana and cocaine, will be commonplace. Man, they nailed that one.
and then now we've got all kinds of other things that are having to deal with. So,
Next is people will routinely live to be 100 years old.
No, not really. We keep
hearing stuff like, do you want to live to
100? It depends on the quality of life, to be quite honest with you. That's would be my only concern. We've got a gentleman in our church that I was just talking with Sunday, and I mean, he's like in his mid-90s, and he still drives to church on Sundays.
That's a mistake.
He's living
Someone
in an assisted
better start
home,
picking him up.
I mean, this guy's a veteran and tough guy, and sadly, he's lost his wife. But he's there every chance he gets. He's had, several health issues, but nothing that's kept him down. And he's like, he still walks right in those doors on Sunday morning.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah.
Someone should be picking him up. I mean, maybe you guys talk around the church and say, "Hey, we're going to arrange for this."
If I were seeing there being some difficulty with him doing it, we certainly would. But he's still just very, for his age, very physically active and very sharp.
I would say once my grandma hit upper 80s, my dad removed the battery out of her car because it's like, please, you shouldn't be driving. Next up is AIDS will be cured and then cancer will be cured. That's the next two up. Manageable for AIDS, cancer, not so much, but there's better treatments.
Well, there are some cancers that are right on the verge of what we would consider, cured or almost. There's still those challenges out there.
And then it said, most stores will be replaced by shopping on the internet. That's interesting.
That's a big prediction. That is occurring.
Is of the crystal ball predictions, that seems to be the one that's most interesting, because who would have imagined the boom in online commerce in 1998? Mm-hmm. That's really fascinating. Yeah. That one, they asked the question, and two, that they were able to answer correctly on that.
Yeah.
Then next is most people will do their jobs from home.
Wow.
Most.
But well, it's not COVID, most, baby. But yeah, there is a lot.
Yeah. And the next is United States will be involved in a full-scale war. Full-scale, no. But, I mean, we're involved in a lot of other things.
Well, when you say a full-scale war, are you saying like World War, like World War I?
World War III, yeah.
Yeah, and so, we've had plenty of things that I would certainly refer to as war between 98 and now.
Okay, here are the things that Americans in 1998 thought were less likely to happen by 2025. So here are the ones that they did not agree on. These are the ones they thought would not happen. Cars will largely be replaced by mass transportation. To see that coming.
I keep hearing that. I'm like, right, yeah. You folks don't live out in the country, do you?
Next is cloning of humans will be commonplace. Cloning of humans? Oh, boy. I mean, I would say the closest we have to that right now are people trying to mimic humans through artificial intelligence as if they were a specific human being.
Yeah. Yeah. There's all kinds of science fiction things about that, about people trying to bring back their, deceased spouse and, implant their memories into a, AI robot or whatever. So, I mean, those are all fiction, but,
Yeah. Most people will be self-employed.
No.
I think they would like for that to be more commonplace, but definitely not. I think for that to happen, you would almost have to have universal health care or something like that.
Yes.
Because I think one of the reasons and the most compelling reason to work for a company is the employer health care.
Which tying that to employment was a huge mistake. I mean, I don't know why in the world we do that, but anyway.
Next is space travel will be common for ordinary humans.
We're getting darn close to that.
Yeah. Ordinary, no. Rich, yes.
Yes.
Ordinary, no.
Yeah.
And the last one, humans will have made or received contact with alien life forms.
Well, we may have and just don't know it yet. So who knows?
Do we not know? One of the things that are interesting about all of this is during the past year, disclosure has become a big thing, particularly with UFOs. I think there's a strong amount of evidence that some of these big companies like Lockheed Martin received some sort of technology that was unexplainable and used it to advance our own technologies. That, to me, is perhaps the best bit of evidence that have come out in the past year that seems like, okay, there could be something here that they're not telling us.
I don't know. I'm just...
Is that conspiratorial?
No, well, somewhat, but still, I don't know. I am on the fence about that. I mean, I can see that point of view, and then I can also see that there are certain organizations or governments or corporations that have developed technology that we're not being... just not being revealed to us for various reasons, so...
It's one of those deals where if you're trying to investigate the evidence and you look at it on a sliding scale, what's the likelihood of this? In some cases, you'll say less than 1%. Sometimes you'll say 99% likely. When you start to see the scale sliding towards 50%, you realize there could be something there. Like it's sliding up. It's on that trajectory.
Or at least the belief of that is there. So,
right. And maybe the evidence isn't there yet, but... there's something to this. Who knows what happens in the future? Lee Rogers, Happy New Year to you, sir.
Happy New
it's
Year
been
to
fun
you,
working
Ryan.
With you this
Same
week.
Same here.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. And joining us this hour is Rabbi Daniel Schoenbuch. He's going to talk about Mamdami. He's going to talk about New York City and the rise of anti-Semitism there. He's going to join us like 15, 20 minutes from now. And the investigation of fraud continues. I think I played most of those clips, but there's a couple other things I want to hit on and a few other things going on around the world, too. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to WORD. Wow, these mornings in particular today have gone by so quick. Really has. And I'll be with you again tomorrow on New Year's Day. Tomorrow's going to be a little bit different, though. So I hope that by tonight you go to bed early and wake up early so we can spend this time together. But I'm not 100% anticipating that's all that's going to happen. You may be staying up late and waking up a little bit later. I understand. But either way, if this is the last time I get to talk to you this hour, I want to wish you a very happy New Year. And I want to say I truly appreciate all the support I've received from you over the past year, filling in for Tara. I get a lot of great comments, nice people saying nice things, mostly. 99% of it's nice. So I really do appreciate them. Earlier, we were talking about the Minnesota fraud, and there was one angle to it specifically that we haven't fully addressed, and what's going on with housing. So HUD Secretary Scott Turner details how non-citizens have been receiving aid as well. This kind of compiles the portfolio of fraud that we're seeing in many different states, Minnesota included. Let me press play here. Okay.
Marie, you know, during the Biden administration, there were over 12 million illegal aliens that came over the border, straining our housing supply and making the costs go up. And so we worked with Secretary Noem at DHS, as you alluded to make sure that only American citizens are living in HUD-funded housing. We also took away FHA-backed mortgages from illegal aliens during the Biden administration. They turned a blind eye. But we're going to keep the law to make sure that these mortgages, which are backed by the taxpayer, go only to the American people. And lastly, we are mandating that every public housing authority give us a comprehensive account who's living in every unit in taxpayer HUD-funded housing.
Doesn't that seem reasonable that the accounting would be there? Here's part of the problem that I think those that are collecting the funds will run into. They're going to say, well, what about us? It's not our fault that we rent to or I'll take the subsidies from those ineligible. We're going to be hurt here. Same thing with perhaps business owners that may own the buildings that some of these fake daycares are in right now. Then what happens when they close down? Oh, I guess this is a tough economy to try to find someone to take over a fake daycare. I wonder if that's going to be part of the discussion that the MSNBCs and the CNNs of the world will start bringing up. You know, it's kind of interesting, too. I've seen some other things. I got a few more clips that I want to play. Scott Jennings continues to just do fantastic work on CNN. And the division in Make America Great Again, MAGA, says that it's widely overblown. So when people look at this, it's mostly artificial. And he brings this point up saying that it's just used as a tool by a lot of times liberals in order to make it look like there's this massive disagreement within the same party. Here's what he said.
The surprising story was, I would say, Marjorie Taylor Greene becomes not just a Trump critic.
MTG becomes a lib. I mean, that's what happened this year. Yeah. She got a little bit out of shape because the president wouldn't support her for a statewide office in Georgia, which she was going to lose if she had gotten into it, by the way. And so she goes off the deep end. Look, I don't think these divisions and all this fraying are as big a deal as some people make it out to be. Trump is still extraordinarily popular among Republicans. He's the strongest party boss in the modern era. And he can get his allies in Congress to do most anything he wants them to do, which is why I think in the coming year, they really ought to spend some time trying to codify, to Rick's point, his executive orders and some of the other initiatives that he's had, really try to make it stick and really fight it out. Because I think a lot of the things he did would actually be pretty popular political debates to have. And so why not spend a little time on that?
Okay. He's right. Another thing that Scott Jennings brought up, and they were talking about this billionaire tax that California will be voting on. And preemptively, a lot of these billionaires are leaving because they said, okay, this wealth tax stuff, it's, what do you mean? Like, this is what governments do when they take the wealth of, like, let's say Venezuela is a great example of this. One day you have a new administration come in, Maduro says, it's ours now. California is coming in and they're taking money that was generated and created through these businesses. These businesses are very valuable. And what they say is, you know what? The government deserves a bigger cut as a, outside of all the other taxes you've paid. The government deserves a bigger cut. And this wealth is actually ours now. You want to talk about socialism. You want to talk about communism in a lot of different ways. This is how Scott Jennings handled a liberal reporter on CNN when bringing this up.
What do taxes do? They redistribute wealth, right?
No, not redistribute it to individuals. It's supposed to be used.
The government
for the
makes choices. So you can make choices in a different way.
My criticism
of the trying to do would be to basically to tax people.
Who are
extraordinarily wealthy. It is not a millionaire tax. These are people, we're talking billions of dollars, okay? That is more money than most people can even fathom.
Worth debating.
So I'm not arguing for it. I'm just saying it's not a millionaire tax. It's a billionaire tax. And the idea would be, I guess, to use that revenue in order to offer improvements for the average Californian.
Worth debating. Why pick a billion? Why in Washington did you pick a million? Why don't you pick 999,999? Why not pick 500,000? Why pick 5%? Why not 6? Why not 10? Why not 20? Why not 50? The thing is, it's all arbitrary just to attack people that we hate. And it is not for the public benefit. In California, the state auditor just found $70 billion in fraud going on in the state. The reason they need a wealth tax is to cover up the fraud. The hole in the budget in California is due to fraud. That's why they're trying to tax these
people. No, but you just admitted that it was
fraud in every state.
He is so 100% correct. As opposed to reprioritizing the budgets, as opposed to cutting the waste in fraud, and as opposed to standing up for the individuals that are taxpayers, you're saying, we know how we can continue the fraud. We know how we can continue to allow the waste because, let's face it, kind of like in Minnesota, that money could be funneled back to us in the form of votes or other support or donations. So we don't want to cut that revenue away from people that are defrauding the government because we benefit from it. What we need to do is find another source of that income. And that income is to take the wealth of people who have earned it and redistribute it in a way to make up for the fraud. That Scott Jennings is 100% correct there. All right, when we come back, we're going to be speaking to Rabbi Daniel Schoenbuch. And what's a very interesting thing happening soon, Mamdani will be the new mayor of New York City. What does that mean for the Jewish community? Does that mean there'll be unfriendly to them? So we're going to get his take on that coming up after the break. I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Tara on WORD. As to end out the year because of what we saw over 2025, continued attacks of Jewish people across the planet, including one near Sydney, Australia, that happened not that long ago. But oh, how quick does the news cycle switch around? Rabbi Daniel Schoenbuch joins us. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Well, one of the things that we're going to see a big change in New York City is a new mayor in Mamdani. And when you look at perhaps some of the beliefs of a Mamdani and where some of the sympathies may lie within his party and some of the changes that would be happening, do you think the Jewish community in New York City needs to be concerned?
Yeah, the Jewish community in New York City is extremely concerned. I mean, there was a riot here in 1991 in Pratt Heights where the police were not allowed to respond to the rioters for several days until the National Guard was called in. People were killed. Houses were attacked and firebombed. You know, we're facing a similar situation now, unfortunately, in Mamdani. Just yesterday, he appointed a top attorney of New York. His name is Ramzi Kassem, who is a supporter of Al-Qaeda and the famous Mahmoud Khalil. He was the Hamas agitator at Columbia University that Donald Trump tried to get rid of. So we're really in danger in New York City, and unfortunately things may even get worse under Mamdani.
Okay. So how do you suggest that the Jewish community in New York City respond to this? What do you think they should be doing?
Well, New York City has been monitoring his appointees, his radical appointees, very carefully. The ADL just issued a report last week that showed up to 20% of his incoming administration have supported publicly anti-Semitic comments online, on Twitter and other places. So people are speaking out. People are carefully monitoring the incoming mayor. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's going to be enough. I think people have to speak up. They have to mobilize. Don't forget that Mamdani only won 51% of the city vote. Usually mayors win 60 to 70%. So half the city is divided against him. So So they have to rally, they have to speak out, and they have to get ready for the next election.
What do you think could happen to, like, let's say even on the business side, there's, you know, there's, you could be living your life and maybe this doesn't impact you as much, but in some case, you know, it very well could. I mean, there could be violence, there could be other bad things that happen to you, but on the business side, do you think there could be some retaliation? Do you think there could be some unfriendly policies indicated that may also target the Jewish community?
Well, for sure. I mean, what targets the Jewish community is what targets every community, is comments like we have to defund the police, for example, which is repeated over and over again. And of course, the business environment will fall apart here, because people, if they don't feel safe, will start moving their businesses out of the city. There'll be less tourism to the city. And of course, it's going to affect everyone. There's less tourism, less money in the city. And also, companies are fleeing New York City right now. This will probably just accelerate what started about 10, 15 years ago, where people are moving to Florida and places like Texas, because these are much more friendly Republican states and administrations.
Do you think that the Jewish community feels unsafe in their place of worship? Do you feel like that's a spot where people are going and they're looking, you know, behind their shoulder? They're just always wondering, could something happen?
Well, they are. I just looked at the hate crime statistics of last month. There were 1,500 hate crimes, and most of them were against the Jewish community. So that's what's making people very frightened. The environment is very scary. Jews are targeted because they look a bit different than the average community person. And they are the victims of most hate crimes in New York City right now. And of course, what happened in Bondi in Australia, the first night of Hanukkah, has really put everybody on the edge. Because there we saw that the police did not respond in time, and that Islamic forces were highly organized, father and son, carried out an ISIS attack, innocent, unsuspecting people on one of the holiest days of the year, the first night of Hanukkah. So people here are very scared right now. We're not sure what the future brings.
Well, are places of worship bulking up their security in times like this? Has that already happened?
Yeah, it's been happening for years. I mean, there's something called the Jewish tax. Jewish taxes, we have to pay more just to live in safety. And that's been happening for many years. Synagogues have been hardening. People are putting bulletproof glass in the front of synagogues. But again, it makes it quite tense. You're going to have security guards, armed security guards eventually in front of houses of worship, because of the political environment, and especially under Galit Mamdani, who is mentioned over and over again, he wants to defund the police. People are less safe here.
Yeah, and we've seen that in some other areas. Places of worship and other denominations have also been finding ways to have the best security practices. What about schools? Do you find that when it comes to your children, are they being targeted, or at least they being left alone?
Well, I think they're going to be targeted, unfortunately, like everybody else is targeted, if they look a bit different or they have a different religion or culture. It's quite frightening. I mean, schools have been hardening their security for many years. This was not like this 20, 30 years ago. But if you go to houses of worship, synagogues in Israel, synagogues in France and in London and other places, they've been hardened for years. They have to actually ask you for your ID before you walk in. So we're not there yet in the United States, but that's what's percolating here. And it's coming closer than we ever thought possible, that we have so much security in these free houses of worship.
Mm-hmm. Rabbi Daniel Schoenbuch joining us here. So how do you think next year will play out, in the sense that we have the Trump administration a year into it? We've seen him stand next to Benjamin Netanyahu just on Monday at Mar-a-Lago. They're continuing to try mm-hmm. to find resolution between Israel and Gaza. Do you think once they mm-hmm. start to get some of these different deals in place, and maybe the ceasefire and a long-term peace deal will maybe benefit the Jewish community in New York? Could that be a sign of better things to come, perhaps?
Yeah, it is very interesting what you're saying. I mean, if things were peaceful in the Middle East, they may be more peaceful around the world as well. But I'm not very hopeful, not because of Donald Trump. He's doing a fantastic job, because Hamas's charter swears to the ultimate destruction of every Jew in the world. That's what it says in Article 7 of the charter in 1988. So this is an extreme Islamic fundamentalist organization that wants to destroy the Jewish people and wants to destroy Judeo-Christian civilization. So there's never been peace with Hamas before. Israel left the Gaza Strip 2005, 2006 they came in. They murdered everybody else who was in power. They haven't had elections since then. They used billions of dollars to build terror tunnels under the ground, up to 300 miles of them, put weapons next to hospitals and under schools. So this is a violent Islamic extremist organization that does not want peace with Israel or any country, including Egypt. So that's the problem. I don't see any hope for that.
That is hard. It really is hard to combat that, because when their main objective in life is to eradicate Jews, and you're up against that, and you're saying, how do you find a peace deal with an organization that hates you so much that they literally want to wipe you from the face of the earth? It just seems impossible to find a peace deal with that. So even if we're finding something written down or some sort of agreement, it doesn't feel like it's genuine. Like all of it together would feel like it's such a fragile thing that would be broken at any moment, and it doesn't feel like you can ever feel safe if that's the case, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, very sad, especially from an American perspective. Americans are very peaceful people. We ascribe good intents even to people that don't agree with us, but that's not the same case in places like the Middle East, where organizations like ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and other terror organizations run the show. So Israel's in a very difficult predicament. I think the only answer is that they have to disarm Hamas even forcibly. That will be the only long-term strategy, and that's what will help the people of Gaza as well. When Hamas gets disarmed, that's the best thing for the Arab population, because then they could build schools and hospitals. They could turn Gaza into parts of it into a beautiful resort for tourism. Anything could have been done with that beautiful beach land. Instead, it was used for terror and destruction. Unfortunately, right now, Hamas is still in control. And as Donald Trump warned, if they don't disarm, there's going to be hell to pay.
I mean this in a very genuine way. And I people listening, I hope it doesn't get misinterpreted. So when you have this sort of mindset where their philosophy is Jews are not allowed to exist, this is our main purpose in life, is to eradicate them, and this is the stance that's very widely believed in, you know, Gaza and some of these parts closer to, you know, the other side of the world. Do you believe that when you're a Mamdani and you surround yourself with people that may be sympathetic to that thinking, that there's an inherent danger always when the leadership has people around them that feel that way too? It's not just something that is isolated overseas on the other side of the planet. It's also something that you have to combat here in the United States.
Unfortunately, you're 100% correct. Unless you take a strong stand, an unequivocal stand, a very clear stand against terrorism and their supporters, then you open the door for more terrorism. It's kind of a black and white situation right now. But Donald Trump has already mentioned through an executive order, he's trying to shut down the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the head of the snake of all this violence around the world. And if we keep on putting pressure on our elected officials to make the Muslim Brotherhood and their organization that they use here called CARE, to shut them down like they're trying to do in Texas and Florida, and to ban Sharia law becoming public, those are the things we need to do immediately. Those are very clear steps we can take to shut down terror, even if Mamdani is in power.
You know, and maybe part of it is, in this, you know, I guess supporters would disagree with me on this. I think one of the big differences is they do it with a smile on their face here in the United States, and they make it look like, oh, this everything's all great. If people wanted to look you up online, Rabbi Schoenbuch, where can they go?
RabbiForAmerica.com. They could watch my great interviews and listen, read my articles and find out what's happening in New York.
RabbiForAmerica.com. Rabbi Daniel Schoenbuch, thank you so much for joining us. Happy New Year to you, and we thank
you. Happy New Year. Great to be with you.
I'm Ryan Ranker, filling in for Tara. One more segment coming up on WORD. You know, the last couple of seconds before we go to break, got a little bit of spit, went down the wrong pipe. Everything was going so good this morning up until the last couple of minutes. I had to cough one more time. Sorry about that. Well, as we get ready to say goodbye to 2025, I wanted you to listen to perhaps someone that sounds worse than I do right now. I can't believe that right before we go on the air, something went down the wrong pipe. Okay, here's what, as I sound bad, I want you to listen to Nancy Pelosi right now. She is not sounding good.
So if the Democrats win the House back?
No. When? Okay. When the Democrats win the House back, then we will.
So how does the next Democratic Speaker of the House deal with Donald Trump? What would be your advice? You've been
be yourself.
You've done it.
Just do your own thing. Just be yourself. Hakeem Jeffries is ready. He's eloquent. He's respected by the members. He's a unifier. And he will have
you have no doubt it will be Hakeem Jeffries.
Yeah. So Nancy Pelosi trying to talk about the order of leadership within the Democrat Party right now, and Hakeem Jeffries would be the next leader. He has a fantastic nickname, which is Dollar Store Obama. I've interviewed him before, you know, polite, much you would expect from most politicians, but he was stumping for Kamala Harris when that was going on during the last election. So where does the GOP sit? So if Hakeem Jeffries and Gavin Newsom are the best that they can offer, where does the GOP sit? On Fox News, Ari Fleischer was there discussing the favorites.
The numbers guy over at CNN said this about the 2028 race, at least on the GOP side of the aisle. Watch.
All right. So then they hop over to CNN's clip, and it is Enten on there discussing it, which, by the way, I like him on CNN. Harry Enten.
Look at this. J.D. Vance, 48% chance. Nobody else is even close. Marco Rubio is way back at 12%, and no one else is even above a 5% chance of being the 2028 GOP nominee. J.D. Vance is like Mario Andretti, and Marco Rubio and the rest of the field are like going around in go-karts at this point.
I mean, I would acknowledge it is early, Ari, but you got to also acknowledge that J.D. Vance is picking up some steam.
Yeah, well, Alabama had about a 0% chance of beating Oklahoma when they were down 17, and they did. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my problem with these percentages of what your likelihood is to win this far out. No one knows. Yeah. The fact of the matter is the Republican nomination is wide open. J.D. Vance starts out with the advantage by virtue of being the vice president. But it is going to be a wide open field where each candidate is going to have to earn it. And whether that's J.D., Marco Rubio, mm-hmm. Ted Cruz, you can name others, every single one of them is going to have to get the approval from the voters, not the pundits, not the pollsters. It's going to be up to the voters. And no one has watched these guys in action yet.
That's a big part of it. All right. Well, 2025 draws near. As 2026 draws near. I'll be back with you tomorrow filling in for Tara. It's been an absolute pleasure. If you want to find me, look at Twitter, at Ryan Recker. Look at Facebook, Ryan Recker Radio. It'd be great to connect on there as well. Have a great rest of your New Year's Eve. We'll talk to you soon.